All right, welcome into Olay, Utah State here on Aggie Radio. I am Ethan.
I'm CJ.
And I'm Sean.
And we're talking soccer.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to start out, we're going to get you a recap of kind of what's been going on with Real Salt Lake soccer as well as our national team. And we're going to get the scores and kind of go more in depth in a little bit. But I guess to start out, what do you guys got for scores?
So on Wednesday, we played New York Red Bulls. It was a score of 2-1. And it was a pretty good game.
Yeah.
It was 2-1.
Yeah. We went down after that to Dallas on Saturday. Played a brand new lineup. I want to say about four different players made their MLS debuts. And we lost 2-0, but I still think we had a pretty decent showing.
Yeah, and we'll go into more depth on that here in a little bit. And then for Team USA, we played Argentina in the semifinals and got our butts kicked, lost 4-0.
Yeah.
You know.
At least it was close.
Right.
Hey, I mean, it's Argentina, and, right. You know, what can you expect?
I mean, you can expect a lot less going forward, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, definitely. Anyway, the third round match, which is kind of, I mean, I don't even know how much of a consolation it really is for the teams playing in it, but I know that they always show up and try to do their best, but we played another top five ranked team in Colombia and lost 1-0. Yep. You know, we started Howard for the first time in the entire tournament and for a while, it seems. And so, you know, kind of wanted that veteran experience that we unfortunately did not get. But yeah. I still think fourth place is okay, you know.
Right.
When you throw in the fact that we were playing in a tournament with Mexico, Brazil, Costa Rica, Argentina, Colombia, Chile, you know, all of these really great ranked FIFA teams.
Right.
I think finishing fourth is something you can kind of at least look at and say, hey, that's not bad.
Yeah, exactly. And then the final, of course, last night.
Yep.
Chile won in penalty kicks.
Yep.
4-2. So.
Yeah. Really rough to see for those of us. Listen, I mean, I love the U.S. and its national team, and I really do. Want to see them succeed in every tournament they can, but as an American citizen, I kind of wanted Argentina to come out with this, to be honest. If for nothing else, for at least Messi's sake.
Yeah.
You know, when we were playing with them, I thought, you know, I don't even know who to root for, because yeah, I want the USA to win, but I really want Messi to win a, you know, an international championship.
Right.
But I mean, at the same time, like, the thing about soccer is you have to have, like, a good team. And it's just, it goes to show that, you know, although Messi is a great individual player, I mean, he can't do it by himself.
Right.
And yeah. So I don't ever, at least, I mean, maybe it's because I'm not huge into soccer like you, but I just feel like I want the best team to win.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, I don't need anyone from the U.S. to be the best player in the world, but I do want the U.S. to win every game.
Yeah.
And so when they finish fourth, I'm disappointed. But I mean, we'll get into that a little bit more when we talk about the game itself. But
yeah.
But yeah, and so I mean, right now it's a pretty good way to transition into a segment we're going to try to do every week. It's called Soccer for Dummies. And this week, we're talking about Messi, right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. The idea behind this segment is, you know, if you are in an office setting where you're not really the only person who isn't a soccer fan, but you are one of the only ones who really isn't a soccer fan, and you want to better, you know, you want to build a relationship with your fellow soccer fan office mates. One thing that you can bring up this week is Messi's retirement from international play. He announced that he's given, you know, he's hanging up his boots as far as Argentina goes.
Right.
At the club level, he has literally won everything there is out there.
Yeah.
You know, like domestic championships, international championships, Club World Cups. You know, he's won the Ballon d'Or more times than any other player in history. I mean, he's done anything that a player could want to do and more for Barcelona, but never for Argentina.
Right.
Which is really interesting, because I wouldn't necessarily say they have a bad team. However, they don't have the players that were able to step up in mm-hmm. those big games.
Right.
You look at, I think it was Higuain, who, mm-hmm. you know, they showed all of the 1v1s that he missed over the last few years.
Uh-huh.
And it's kind of, it's disappointing, but it's definitely more heartbreaking than anything.
Right.
You know, kind of to witness a player miss so many, to witness a player miss one, is right. really hard. I know that when we played in the CONCACAF Champions League final in 2011, Espíndola missed a 1v1, and he didn't, I don't think he really showed his face for our team for a few weeks. He was just so depressed, right. is what I was listening to. But yeah. to miss three in a World Cup final and two Copa America finals, yeah. I mean, that's rough.
And, you know, and Messi missed that PK at the end.
Yeah, that was...
you know, I mean, I'll be straight, I'll be honest, I'm not really a Messi fan, so... I've been kind of rejoicing. No, no, it's sad to see a soccer player like that go. You know, like to think that next World Cup that like one of the best players in the world isn't going to be playing.
Yeah,
like well, that you got sucks. You know,
Ibrahimovic, who also
Ibrahimovic is out.
You know, announced his retirement from international mm-hmm. play, and you know, so definitely talk to your office coworkers about that. But I want to ask you, Ethan, as far as. Basketball, football goes, you know a little bit more about that. I understand that throughout the world, there isn't much competition in football and basketball, right, as there is soccer.
Yeah.
I think the U.S. pretty much dominates. But at what point do you kind of, I don't know, like, is it really rare for some of these really great players to say, you know what, I'm done, calling it quits at such a young age, or do they kind of want to go on forever?
I mean, the thing about it is, like, he's not calling it quits from all soccer. It's just right. his international play. And there's a lot of the top players in the NBA that aren't going to be participating in the world or in the Olympics
mm-hmm.
this year.
Yeah.
Like, LeBron James isn't. Most of these guys who have kind of carried the torch for the last two, three competitions internationally aren't going to be there. And so some of the younger guys are playing. So, I mean, it's not really that far-fetched. The thing that I kind of look at is more of, that it doesn't completely like equal out or whatever, but like last year, before last football season, the off season before, there was like three or four guys that all retired when they were like 25, and it was super wow. weird.
Mm-hmm.
They all did it because of health reasons, just because either they didn't want to have to worry about their health later on, or they had some issue that they just felt was going to keep nagging them and they didn't want to make it worse.
Yeah.
And, but that was really weird, because you know, you don't really see it that often, at least from guys who are successful. But I mean, it decimated the San Francisco 49ers last year.
Right.
On top of them losing their coach, they also lost a bunch of players. And they were a completely different team last year, and that's why they struggled so much. But as far as internationally, I mean, I don't think it's that. I don't think it's completely strange that, you know, for a top player to say, "Hey, you know, like I'm not gonna participate." But at least for the ones in professional basketball, like these guys have all the ones that aren't gonna do it this year, they might go for it again later.
Yeah, right.
They haven't said that they're done. They're just not going this time. But they also have won gold medals, so
yeah,
Messi hasn't yet.
Right.
And he's been, the thing about it that's kind of strange is he's right on the cusp. Like, he's been in the championship of... So, obviously, he was in the Copa America championship. They were in the World Cup championship last time.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, he's right there. So, I find it a little bit strange that he's quitting because, you know, he's right on the verge of winning that international championship for his country. But he's stepping away.
Right.
But yeah. The reason why, in my mind, that I see that he's doing it is because he doesn't think his teammates are good enough to get him that, and he doesn't want to go through all that effort to, like, detract from his regular, you know, seasons where he is having success, and he just feels like it's, in the end, it's a waste of his time because he doesn't have a chance of actually winning because his teammates aren't good enough to help him get there.
Yeah. I don't know, like, I guess I can see that point, like, just that, you know, he's leaving because his team isn't good enough. I don't know. Like, I guess I'm just one of those guys that's like, you keep going and keep, like, you know, that's his country. I just, it brings me back to like the World Cup when Cristiano Ronaldo said that Portugal wasn't a world-class team. And he got so much flack for saying that because he like left his team. And so like Messi leaving, like, I mean, he's literally leaving his team.
Right. Well, listen, I mean, as a U.S. soccer fan, it's really hard for us, I think, to imagine, you know, Landon Donovan, for example, leaving at 29.
Right.
When he was left off the roster for the 2014 Cup,
yeah,
I mean, it caused ripples all, you know, all right, around the world. Everyone was just kind of confused, scratching their heads like, really, what's going on?
Yeah.
especially when you brought in, you know, like, look, I'll be honest, you brought in Beckerman, you brought in Wando, you know, all of these older players that really hadn't been a part of the international scene.
Right.
For a while. They weren't, they were definitely weren't there under Bradley.
Mm-hmm.
And were probably not as close to the arena ages as they, you know, maybe would have liked to have been.
Yeah. Yeah.
But as a US soccer fan, it's really hard to see anyone hang their boots before they are too old to do so.
Yeah, like,
you know what I mean? But I mean, I understand, like, when we lost the final against Kansas City in 2013, I don't think, as a fan, okay, not a player, not a coach, not even a fan who was there, just a fan watching on TV, I don't think I had ever been more upset or down about anything. Now, to do so as a player four different times, you know what I mean? Twice in PKs, once in extra time,
right?
You know, really close to PKs. At what point do you just kind of say, I can't do it anymore?
Like, you can't handle the emotional roller coaster.
Right, right. Yeah. That's exactly what I'm saying. Because the thing I keep thinking about is when LeBron left Cleveland, you know, for Miami. That's what I'm thinking. Look, I can't win it in Cleveland, and I really want that championship. So I'm going to go to someone who I think can. And he did it. And he won two. But you can't do that when you're an international player. You know, you can't,
that's true.
You can't say, oh, I'm going to go play for Brazil now, or whoever, you know what I mean? As soon as you play for a country, on a country senior team, you are tied to them for life.
Exactly.
Even if you have dual citizenship. And so it's different, but I'm wondering how much of him just can't do it anymore.
Just can't handle the emotional emotion. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just too rough. And I mean, I don't blame him.
Yeah.
Over the next few weeks, months even, you're going to hear a lot of smarter people who get paid way more than we will ever get paid, discuss it and analyze it and share their opinions on it. But like we were saying earlier, if you just want to reach out to those soccer fans and get a little closer to them, Messi retiring and missing that PK is definitely.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. As you can see, like, me and CJ are just talking about it. We'll go off for like 10 minutes. You don't even have to say anything just other than, hey, did you see Messi retired? And then they'll just go off together. Yeah. But you brought it up. Like, you're the smart one.
Right.
But speaking about more emotional roller coasters, was RSL's games that we wanted to go a little bit deeper into.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So Wednesday for, I don't even know, really, the sixth time I think we've gone down a goal.
Right.
Early, even. Mm-hmm. And we come back to win it.
Like, right.
What on earth?
And, you know, it was kind of scary because they didn't start Bradley Wright Phillips, their top striker.
Or Sasha Kljestan. Or Dax McCarty.
Exactly.
I mean, they brought up a pretty B lineup, if you will.
Yeah, and so we go down, and there was, I remember the ref was calling some very questionable fouls.
Just a few.
Yeah. Just a few. I just remember being upset at that. Probably the worst one of them was Joao Plata's foul. He didn't even get carded, did he?
He didn't get carded.
Basically, the best way I know to describe it is Plata's running down the right side, and the defender slides, but he's like up in the air, so he hits the ball like with his foot on the ground, but his other leg is like completely in the air, and Plata does this front flip. And I know a lot of people say, oh, that's flopping. Like, this was not a flop. Like, he took Plata's legs out. And he didn't even get, I think, did he get whistled for a foul?
I think he wasn't going to, but then the sideline ref was waving his flag and stuff. I think he was going to just call the ball out.
Right.
Before the sideline ref was waving his flag. It's like, no, that was a pretty bad foul.
So I just remember that. And then there was that the game where we had the Plata went down on the other side and had a chance and they called a foul on him?
Yes.
For pulling down the guy somehow. I don't know. I don't understand that call, but I mean, that could have been, you know, possibly a goal scoring opportunity, but it got called off.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, if we breaking things down a bit, we went down early, I think 7th minute, right, off of a set piece goal.
Oh yeah, and, that's right.
If you look back, Mufsisian actually is the one who loses his marker.
Oh no.
And I know he's one of my favorite players, and he loses his marker, and the guy just goes and places it on frame, and there's not much Romano can do about it.
Right.
However, I was listening to Kassar's post-game show, and he was talking about getting the fans involved early.
Right.
And I don't know if you noticed, right before we even things up, but someone over, I want to say in Section 35, on the east side of the stadium, just started the Believe chant, and it sort of carried over.
Yeah.
And eventually, I think... in a rare blue moon, the South goal was like the last group to get involved.
Yeah.
And once they finally did, you got the entire stadium going. You know, I almost saw, I definitely felt a change.
Yeah.
And I almost saw it in the players. And then Sturzer gets that crazy assist. I think it was like 10, 15 yards out, and he just places it right on Yura's head, and
right,
he redirects it the other way and goes right in. And I mean, there's nothing Robles can do about that.
Right.
You know, it was just amazing.
And that's the other thing that we should mention. I mean, Robles, their goalkeeper, I mean, he's like, you know, he was the goalie of the year last year. He's really good. I mean, he's not easy to score on. And we, you know, we score that one early, or, you know, in response to that early goal. And that's what I was going to say about the crowd being involved. Like, I didn't even really realize that they had scored. I just, like, you know, and down at South Goal, like, you know, the drums are going, like, nothing. Like, everywhere else in the stadium, like, everyone kind of sighs when somebody scores. But down there, like, nothing changed. So I'm, like, looking around, and I just look up, and I see New York celebrating. I'm like, what the heck? And I was like, oh, my gosh, they scored, you know?
Yeah, it was pretty fast.
Yeah, that was crazy. And then, you know, of course, then later in the game, we get that deflection goal from Jordan Allen. But even, like, looking at the replay, like, the initial spot that he shot at, I don't think Robles had covered.
Yeah. Probably not. I think with the pace that he hit it,
right,
it was definitely going to be something that he would probably have problems with. Mm-hmm. Hopefully had problems with.
Yeah.
You know.
We like to tell ourselves.
Definitely.
And then Saturday, we played FC Dallas.
Yeah.
And
as I said earlier, we played pretty much a brand new lineup. I know for sure these players haven't played together as far as an official MLS match goes.
Mm-hmm.
I know that some of them have probably played together for the Real Monarchs team, or reserve games maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And here and there they've been, you know, introduced to the starting lineup, but they're next to Plata and Burrito and
right,
Morales and Beckerman and in front of Raimondo. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And so you have a ton of veterans who are there showing you and talking to you.
Yeah.
The thing that I liked seeing was how well they played, how close to the plan they stuck.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, we lost 2-0, and it sounds like a bad scoreline, and maybe it is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the bigger picture, most of these guys are... That's our next team. You know
right,
what I mean? Most of these guys are going to be there when Javi and Beckerman and Raimondo, you know, start fading and retiring.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are going to be the ones to step up. You know,
right,
Tony Beltran as well. I think Okwuanu,
yeah,
I mean, was fantastic for Beltran.
Yeah.
And not only that, but I think that he sort of adds that rotation that we definitely need and we will need
right,
down the stretch.
Because that's true. You know, you got to get these guys playing time. I mean, because, like you said, they're eventually going to come in and fill in for these guys. And, I mean, what's the point of having the Real Monarchs team if we can't pull them up occasionally to rest our starting players?
Well, that's where Glad started.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's where Glad got his start. Most of last year he played for the Monarchs. And
yeah,
and I don't think I definitely don't feel comfortable without him in the starting lineup.
Yeah,
you know?
Not now, yeah. And, you know, I'll be honest, at first I didn't really like him because he was young. And, you know, kind of had that same feeling when I first saw the lineup on Saturday. I was like, really? Like, we're going to bring in these kids, you know, that aren't our starters. But, you know, obviously Glad's turned into, like, one of our central defenders.
Right. No, yeah, I mean, I remember reading articles. Well, I mean, in the preseason, we were scrambling for center defenders, right?
Mm-hmm.
Scrambling all over the globe. You know, we had people scouting in South America. We had people scouting in Europe. We had people scouting, you know, all over the place.
Right.
And everything literally just fell through.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I don't exactly remember when or how Olave, quote unquote, lost his starting position. You know, he may not have.
Yeah.
But I know that most fans and most analysts would agree that Mon and Glad are a central pairing that is definitely needed. Yeah,
that's what I was going to say with Olave. Like, I remember it was just like we got him back and it was like, okay, here we go. Like, you know, I'm thinking like because he played really well with New York.
Yeah.
And he comes into Real Salt Lake and he's older. He's not the same Olave that we had when, you know, in 2009 or, you know, any of in the earlier years.
Right.
And he's still the big guy that takes people down, but instead of now getting away with it, he gets red cards. And so it was like every time you'd see someone get behind him, which was a lot, there was a possibility of a red card.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And that's hard, you know.
Yeah.
He's a massive guy.
Yeah.
And anything from him looks so much worse than, say, from Plata.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but at the same time, at the other end of the field, people really beat up on Plata.
Yeah, he gets beat up every game.
And because he's such a feisty player, because he's a kind of guy who won't quit, he'll get right back up or he won't fall down easy.
Yeah.
Right? And that's why I think you don't see those calls. And I think that's a little more admirable than getting those calls personally. Right.
Yeah, no, I that's again like kind of an Americanized thing too. Like we want, you know, tough to the nails kind of thing. But yeah, so Saturday we had a really young lineup, and
I mean, like I said, I think we showed well. I mean, you and I were talking, we watched it together, we were talking about the two goals that they scored off of. One, they completely caught us off guard off of a set piece.
Yeah, and I think I should add in there too, this wasn't a rookie that got scored on. This was Chris Winger, like our starting, you know, left back.
Yeah. And in the press conference, Jeff Cassar was saying that is exactly what they talked about not doing.
Yeah.
And it happened. But you know what? The only way they're going to learn is to have it happen and be able to learn from that. You know what I mean? The second goal, I don't know if you've seen the assist, but it was a bicycle assist.
Right.
And I mean, that's just crazy. You know, I mean, to get that much on it and direct it where you want it to go. I mean, it's like at least 1 in 10, if not 1 in 100 chance.
Right.
And, but definitely caught Okwuanu off and Olave as well.
Right.
And you know they had the speed to get up to him, but I mean by then it was just kind of too late. But
and then I don't know, USA. We can kind of go over briefly when they played Argentina and then lost 4-0, and Messi was kind of the orchestrator that, you know, kind of was the sink of our ship, kind of, you know.
I don't think anyone who's really aware of global soccer, of international soccer, expected us to win.
Yeah.
But I will say I don't think anyone expected them to score 3 minutes in.
Right.
You know what I mean?
That was pretty crazy. And you know, as I watched the replays yesterday of that game, just kind of reminding myself of the anger that I felt. You know, like, so you're playing Argentina. So first of all, like, they didn't even start all their best players. I mean, yeah, they started Messi, but they didn't start Aguero.
Right.
There was another player that didn't start. Di Maria. Yeah, they didn't start him either. I mean, that's two, like, I know they were saying Aguero has the most goals per minute out of anybody in the tournament. And anyway, so really, you have Messi that you're just watching, obviously. And in that first 3 minute goal, he's left wide open.
Yep.
Like, who does that?
Right.
You know?
Teams that want to lose.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's like, oh, hey, there's the best, you know, one of the best players in the world, and they're now, like, he's open on this corner.
Yeah.
And
sorry, you can say best player in the world. That's fine.
And he, you know, then he does this, like, crazy chip right over the top, and, you know, we talked about Guzan just being flat-footed and not being ready for that, and, you know, they just score it right over him.
Right. And then after that, the giving up a free kick that close to goal.
Yeah.
It's just dangerous business. It's just silly play. But, I mean, even then, there was literally one place for that ball to go.
Right.
And Messi put it there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There was absolutely nowhere else it could have gone where it would have went in. And sure enough, he picked his spot, and it went right in. It was probably the best free kick I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And at that point, sure, you can be upset, but you got to just respect the game. I don't know. Ethan, how many times do you see someone play against San Antonio or Denver, and you're just like, dang, that was a good play.
Well, I mean, I look for stuff like that all the time. I mean, yeah, it's upsetting that it happens against my team when it does. But, like, me as, I mean, because my plan is to be a coach, and so I look for different things, and, like, I'm not just, like, a hardcore, like, everything my team does is great and everything the other team does is bad.
Sure.
So, I mean, like, I'm able to recognize, yeah, that was a great play, or, yeah, I mean, that guy did a really good job. Yeah, we deserve to lose that because the other team played better.
Yeah.
But, yes, yeah, so, I mean, anytime that does happen, I'm just like, this is a good play, dang it.
Yeah, definitely. I know that MLS Soccer does Goal of the Week and Save of the Week. And,
right.
And they let fans vote for the Goal of the Week and Save of the Weeks, but anytime it's against RSL, I'm always just like, I don't really want to vote for it, but gosh, I can't. I can't excuse a dang good goal like that.
Yeah.
You know, I can't excuse a bicycle assist.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, and then...
I mean, that's not very impressive, you know? Yeah. It's being able to kick the ball up above your head.
Yeah. To another player to score. Yeah.
That's not impressive at all.
Yeah. No, and then, of course, then we play for third place after losing to Argentina to Colombia.
Yeah. Right?
And we'd played Colombia the first game of the tournament and lost 2-0, right?
Yep.
So it was kind of a round robin thing. Like, we're coming back to the team that we lost to, and like you were saying, like, I mean, I heard on another talk show, it's like these people, like the third place games are the players that really want to play, like,
yeah,
you know. And I just, like, for example, like Dempsey, I don't see him as that type of player. Like, he's just kind of like, I'm too cool for this kind
of
thing.
Yeah, you almost see that. A little bit of arrogance there, definitely.
Yeah.
Probably from Jermaine Jones.
Yeah.
As well. I'm picking on people here, sure.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they just seem arrogant a bit. Certain other people, like, I don't know, maybe at that point, that's why you call up a guy like Morris.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because if nothing else, they get experience against the top right. five ranked team.
So, I mean, you know, tough game, and we end up losing 1-0. We actually didn't watch the game because Real Salt Lake was playing.
At the same time,
you got to have priorities.
You just got to go to B-Dubs and watch them both at the same time.
Watch them both. We could have. If I was there.
I was at B-Dubs, and I watched a good portion of the international one. I mean, I would look at the RSL one, but it was easier to follow the other one because also they had the sound on for it.
Oh, I see.
But, I mean, they were side by side, so I was watching both of them. But
okay.
Mostly I was focusing on the international one.
Right.
But, yeah, so it was disappointing for me because, you know, I feel like we were in positions to win that game, but we just didn't really, like, attack enough. I mean, I always say this, but I don't think our national team attacks enough.
Right.
It's more of this pass it back and forth and eventually hope something opens up instead of trying to make something happen. Mm-hmm. Also, I mean, it's great to, like, try to set up like a perfect shot or whatever, but at times you just got to go for it.
Right. Speaking of all of that, so when we played against Argentina, we didn't have Jermaine Jones, and he might be a center defender, he might or midfielder, he might be a an attacking midfielder, but he definitely plays that box-to-box role better than Beckerman.
Yeah.
And he goes forward a lot more.
Yeah.
When he was suspended for that game, a lot of people assumed Darlington Nabby would pick up that spot.
Right.
Right? Let Michael Bradley sit in the back, okay, kind of control that midfield area from the back, and let Nabby go in and attack with Dempsey and Zardes.
Yeah.
But we didn't go with that.
No.
We went with Beckerman, and it was definitely the safer option. And listen, I know it's Beckerman, and I want to see him play all the time.
Yeah.
Right? But I don't know. What do you – you go that route, play the safe route, if you will, so you don't get scored on early.
Right.
And that's exactly what happens.
You
get scored on in the third minute. And
you
listen,
know.
I mean – I you know, Argentina, may, you know, Argentina, Germany, Netherlands, I don't care who it is. If you go in with that plan, you should not get scored on in the third minute.
Right. If you're planning, your plan for the game is to defend, then you should probably defend, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
And like you said, like, having Kyle in, like, is, you know.
The safe bet.
Or else, yeah, like, it's a safe bet. And as a fan, like, of Real Salt Lake, obviously that's a bias. I'm like, all right, let's go get him, Kyle. Like, you know, I have all the faith in the world. But even watching him, I mean, watching Messi just run past him and make him fall down, like almost fall down, and it's just like, dang, you know, like this, our defensive plan is not working.
No, yeah, exactly. And so you get a lot of people who are trying to analyze this the best they can. A lot of people saying, I know we talked about this a couple weeks ago, Ethan, that maybe Klinsmann does deserve to go. What do you think about that? Do you think it's time for a new coach? Or?
I think so, because, I mean, sure, the team has made progress, but they haven't made enough in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, I believe we have the talent to be right up there with everyone else in the world. I mean, sure, we're not going to win every time, but some games, like, we just don't even compete with people. Yeah. Like, with Argentina, we didn't really even compete with them, getting just destroyed.
Yeah.
Even with Colombia, like, I felt like we should have done more than we did, and I feel like a lot of that is on the coaching. So, yeah, I do think that we need to find somebody else who, like, has more of a, I don't know, a different mindset, really. Because I think that we've got the guys in place, but or in place to succeed, but we have to put them in the right position and have the right strategy. For example, Bobby Wood, like, he almost scored in that game when he was in the center. He ended up making it to the center and just, like, kind of muscled his way to make a shot, and it went off the post.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the closest we had gotten to scoring all night. And he always seems to succeed when he's in the middle, yet Klinsmann has him lining up on the outside.
Right.
And it's, the opposite is true with Dempsey. Dempsey does better off the ball and then catching it and then going. But they have him in the middle trying to run the ball, and he just hasn't done a great job with it.
Right.
I mean, he's a good player, but he does a lot better once when he's working off of someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And so I figure if you switch those two guys around, they're going to open up a lot more opportunities to score. But for whatever reason, Klinsmann doesn't think that they should, because those guys both thrive better in those positions.
Right.
And it's easy to just flip them around, and Klinsmann won't do it. And so I think that he's not really playing to their strengths, the strengths of the team, as much as he could be.
Mm.
And, I mean, for me, I think that your coach has to do that, because, I mean, you're not going to always have the most talented players on your team in the world, but you're going to have decently talented guys, but you got to set them up to succeed the best. And that's true for coaching on any sport, any level.
Right. Like,
you have to have your guys in the position where they can succeed. I mean, that's your job as a coach. You can't do everything. They have to do a lot of the work.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to put them in a good position where they can succeed. And I just don't feel like he does it enough.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I've been a Klinsmann defender and supporter, but I can't argue for him anymore at this point. Yeah. Unfortunately, I can't say, the only thing that you can say at this point is, well, who comes up then?
Yeah.
Who steps up and takes over?
Right.
See, I mean, that I don't know. I don't know all the different coaches or whatever, but I just know that what he's doing isn't working enough. And I think it's ridiculous that his, you know, goal going into this tournament was to make it to the semifinals. You know, your goal every time should be to win. Like, if you're not going to win, what's the point?
Right.
Right.
I mean, sure, say you are going for the win and you end up, you know, falling a little bit short, but it's still better than you've done. You can still be happy with that, but why set that as your goal?
Right.
Like, he comes out publicly and says, you know, our goal is to get to the semifinals. Why?
Yeah.
Why would that be your goal? Like, why isn't your goal to win? And I feel like he doesn't believe in the team enough to kind of, like, push them to try to say, you know, like, we haven't won the Copa America ever. Like, we haven't, the best we've done is fourth place in the past. But, you know, why not be the first team to do it?
Right.
Why can't we be the first team to do it?
Mm-hmm.
Or at least make it to the championship game, and just to set the bar at just, okay, well, we got fourth one time, so let's see if we can get that, like, at least that. I mean, just that.
Yeah.
It's like, why not go for the win?
Yeah.
I think that we have the talent. I think he needs to do a better job of putting them in position, like I was saying, and also attacking. I mean, the strategy just is a little bit too conservative.
Right.
Because when you go against these tough teams like Argentina, like, they're going to be able to score. And if your game always revolves around just controlling the ball and passing it back and forth and not taking very many shots, I mean, how are you going to score?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you're going to do that, the very least defend.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Defend and don't let a goal in 3 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, after the whistle blows, you know?
Yeah. And I actually remember when I was watching that game, they actually had Landon Donovan commentating, which was pretty cool. And they kind of just asked him, like, okay, they just scored. Like, what does that mean for the team? Like, obviously, that changes the mentality. And after we went down 2-0, Landon Donovan was like, look, they need to attack. Like, it doesn't matter if you lose 4-0, 2-0, 1-0. Like, it's the same. Like, so, you know, say, you know, that we attack and we get scored on again. Like, we're not in any worse of a situation than we already were, you know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Interesting thing from Landon Donovan.
Yeah, and, like, I agree with him. Like, I think you've got to attack. You got to get some goals on the board. Even if you aren't able to come back, like, you've got to at least try to.
Yeah.
And I just feel like, even when we're down like that, we just are too conservative. Like, mm-hmm. we're just passing it back and forth. We don't attack enough. And, like, the problem with it, in my mind, is the way I think about it, is the best opportunity to score is when you have numbers or when the defense is out of position. And so if you're doing that pass back and forth, the defense has time to set up and be all in position. And you can pass around all day, and you might not ever get a good shot.
Right.
Whereas, like, if you're attacking, sure, maybe you don't end up having the numbers. Maybe it's like 3-on-2 and you have the two. Mm-hmm. But at least the defense has to, like, be on the move, and they're got to be scrambling to try to get in position. At least do that so that they're not comfortable all the time. Because whenever I'm watching it, like, it just feels like the other team's defense is always in a comfortable position because they're all back there. They're all where they're supposed to be to defend.
Yeah.
And for me, like, especially with basketball, like, I think about this is, yeah, the ball movement is important because you want to get the defense, like, rotating around and be off balance and then attack. And so I think that it is good to pass the ball, but once you have a little bit of an opening, you've got to, like, go and attack and make the defense move, take their eyes off of their guy, and you just, everyone's got to attack,
right,
or you're never going to score.
Yeah, no, that's the big message I'm thinking of here, like, in a phrase is, you know, stop waiting for the play to happen and make the play happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, speaking of that, there was a comment that someone made in the Real Salt Lake postgame show last Wednesday about Sturzer's cross. Now, listen, I don't think I've seen another player do with the ball what Burrito does with the ball.
Right.
Since Javi's prime days.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, he is magical. Watching him play, you just kind of get hypnotized in how beautiful it is. I mean, yeah. 1-2 and he's around a guy, 3-4 touches and he's around 2 more.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's incredible. You know, you'll see. I mean, we saw on Wednesday. We saw, you know, it was Plata and I think Mavsisian, and then 3 or 4 New York defenders, and out of nowhere, Plata comes away with the ball.
Yeah.
You know, and he's making a run towards goal.
Right.
Right? And so you see Plata and Burrito doing these same things, and I don't know, you can argue that maybe they want to literally walk the goal in,
yeah,
right? But you get Sturzer's cross, and, I mean, it's right to Yura's head.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so his comment was, how, like, look, I don't think we have ever had a better attacking trio.
No.
You know, than what we have right now.
Yeah.
But I wonder how much we would improve if our wings sort of stepped up and set those crosses into Yura.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And listen, we're scoring, you know, give or take 2 goals a game.
Right.
You know, because we played a brand new lineup against Dallas, we didn't get a goal. We got a shutout, and that's fine.
Yeah.
Okay. With our starting lineup, we're scoring on average 2 goals a game.
Right.
And we're absolutely killing it in attack.
Yeah.
But how much of that is held back? I mean, that's a bad phrase to use, but really kind of not as productive maybe as it could be unless we get those wings. And I don't know. I mean, what do you think?
Like, so, yeah, I can see what you're saying. Like, you know, we can't rely on our front three to, like, always be able to, like, walk around defenders. Like, that maybe we need to get some back support in there. Like, you know, like, and that's what we were saying with, what was his name again? The guy that played for Tony?
Okwanu.
You know, he adds that maybe Tony Beltran doesn't. Just because Tony, you know, I love Tony, but he's not the fastest guy on the field, you know. And so he can't play up as far. Because he, you know, he has to stay back to make those runs if you know, they chip it over the top. And then Winger, you know, you know, I know Wingert's been a part of the club for a long time, but he always plays back. Like, very rarely do you see him cross it in.
Sure.
And so that's when you get DeMar Phillips in there, he plays a little bit more up top too and tries to cross it in. And, you know, I just look at our attacking and, you know, we've got some height in there. You know, like, Ura's pretty tall. Burrito's not, like, amazingly tall. And then, you know, of course, Plata's pretty short.
Well, he scored some headers still.
Yeah,
he scored
still
a couple headers before, right. So he can do it.
And that's the thing. That's one thing I miss a little bit about, you know, a few years back, watching those crosses go in and, like, how dangerous we were on set pieces, like, on corners and whatnot. And it doesn't seem like we're that dangerous, you know, unless they're close and one of our guys can kick it in.
Sure.
So I can see where you're coming from. Like, yeah, we definitely need to round out our attack to where it's not just, we're going to pass it up to Burrito and, like, see what he can do.
Well, I mean, he and Plata can do wonderful things.
Yeah, exactly.
But, unless you have, you know, Kyle and whoever he's paired up with really sitting back there, you're going to open yourself up for counterattacks.
Yeah.
And that's a problem that is really tough, but especially now that Sonny's out.
Mm-hmm.
On Wednesday, I don't know if you were watching it all, Ethan, on Wednesday, he went in for a header during a corner kick, and the goalkeeper came out and tried to fist the ball away, ended up catching him in the head, and he broke two facial bones.
No, I didn't see that. I was working.
Yeah, so he's out for a minimum of 6 weeks, and when he comes back, he'll be wearing a face mask and stuff. But
yep,
that's not bueno.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. But in my opinion, we have the people to fit in.
Yeah.
Now
it was a little scary going into Dallas because, I mean, obviously we didn't know what kind of lineup we were going to put in, and we're like, okay, no more. You know, Sonny's out. Kyle's still at the U.S. team.
Yeah.
We have Javi and Mulholland and Sturzer, but if one of them go down, we don't have anybody to put in.
Right.
You know. And I guess Kassar ended up putting in, you know, Phillips for Mulholland in the game. And so maybe Phillips can play midfield if we you know, needed him to.
Yeah, definitely. But in my opinion, I don't know, if you get maybe Sturzer,
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe Sturzer and Kyle holding that D mid line, right? And then behind them you have Glad and Mond. Then maybe you can afford to send Wingert and Beltran up to try to get those crosses into these players. I don't think you're ever going to get too much aerial attack from Plata.
Yeah.
You know, or
yeah.
or Javi even, because, I mean, he might not be up that far for an aerial attack, right?
Right.
The only person who I think you can really kind of depend on for an aerial presence is Mofsisian.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think if we can get that down, we'll be triple threat, you know, and we'll be attacking these teams on set pieces, on aerial attacks, and on the ground. Because between, like I say, for the third or fourth time, between Plata and Burrito, you got some really amazing skills on the run and on your feet, and you turn around and they're gone. And I mean, I don't know. I think the people they go against end up ball watching, and it's like, whoa, what are you doing with your feet? And then, oh crap, you're around me.
Right.
That's how I expect it goes.
Yeah,
because that's how it is for me. You know what I mean? I've seen three or four defenders come to Burrito, and he does something, and he's away, and he's on the run.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or he's giving it to someone else.
Right.
Like Morales or Plata, and they're on the run now, and he's, you know, pass, and those three defenders are wondering where the ball is.
Yeah.
Many times, and I know it's not as hard to see from the stands as it appears.
Mm-hmm.
You can definitely see a lot of detail from the stands.
Right.
Because the stadium is really close.
Yeah.
Obviously, sometimes you're not able to if you have terrible eyesight. But
yeah, sure.
But for people with average eyesight, you're gonna be able to see it.
Yeah, and the ball is really hard to miss. You know, 1 minute it's there, and the next the ball and Burrito are just off on the run, or Plata, or Mofsisian. Even sometimes, you know, he'll get in on the speed thing too.
It's what I do in FIFA all the time.
Exactly. No,
I give it to my guy, and I just like race past around the guys, and then go up and just have a one-on-one with the goalie. And
no, that's literally Mofsisian. That's like what he does.
Yeah,
it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's great to have him, and I hope he's able to stay for a while.
Yeah, I was gonna say you actually got an opportunity to speak with Kassar.
Yeah, I spoke with head coach Jeff Kassar yesterday, and listen, Yura Mofsisian as of right now is on loan. I spoke to a friend of mine who worked for Real Salt Lake last year, and he was telling me that because Real Salt Lake is a franchise of Major League Soccer, we're under the umbrella of Major League Soccer, they have the opportunity to accept and decline any trade or move that we want to make. I don't know if it's like that with any other big leagues.
Mostly no, because most of them they have to deal with the salary cap.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it's really the two teams like have to agree on a trade. But I mean, there's not anything that's like the same thing as with a loan, whatever. Where like if you trade them, like the other team like then has rights to the player. So
yeah,
it's not like you let him out for a while and then bring him back whenever you feel like. or whenever the loan runs out. But yeah, so it's not really a similar setup anywhere else.
What about as far as trades go? If the Cavs want to trade a player with Miami Heat, can the NBA then come down and say, no, that's too much, we're not going to let that happen?
I'm sure they probably have some stipulation where they could, but I mean, no one ever makes those trades that
yeah.
You can do it. The only time that I can think of that something like that happened was a couple years ago when someone was trying to trade to get Chris Paul. I don't remember who it was, from the Hornets, and it was just going to make their team super stacked.
Right.
It might have been the Lakers before they just completely became terrible. but I'm not sure on that. I think it was the Lakers. But anyway, the NBA came in and said, like, no, you can't do that. But at the same time, the ownership of the Hornets was, like, or I guess they were still the Hornets at that time. They're the Pelicans now.
That's right.
But anyway, they were, like, trying to get out of it or whatever. And so basically they didn't really care how it affected their team. And the NBA came and said, you know, that's not a fair trade for anybody in the league. It's, like, very unfair. And then not too long after that, the NBA like took possession of it because the other guys, I don't remember exactly, they either they went bankrupt or they couldn't find a buyer or something. But anyway, the NBA took over for like a season or so, and now that they have different ownership. But
okay.
Yeah, then Lakers fans, if I'm remembering this right, it was Lakers fans. They were upset because later on Chris Paul went and signed with the Clippers, so they were a bit upset because they thought that they would have him.
Okay. Yeah, so basically what happened last year was two different times. One of them was Sissy and the other one was Aaron Johansson. I don't know if you ever heard the name. He's off in Germany right now. He played for the U.S. men's national team. He wasn't called up for Copa America, I don't think he was. And if he was, he definitely didn't make an appearance. But
yeah.
We had basically set up a trade for him. We offered him an amount. He and his agent accepted. Everything was done in one and done, and the league came in and like, no, we're not going to let that happen because, it's not as exciting than, say, if he signed with a bigger market team.
Yeah.
And then we're like, okay, well, that kind of sucks, but whatever. Same thing happened with Mosesian.
Right.
They said, no, that's a little too much than we think he deserves.
Mm-hmm.
And that sucks because he wanted to come back. We wanted him to come back.
Right.
Every party had agreed, except, and the league was able to come and say no. But anyway, so this year we signed him on loan. And whether or not we intend to keep him, the coach couldn't really say. He said that's more of a general manager question, which I understood. But we definitely would love to see him.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think that we ever planned for Mufsisian to come in for even 1 year and then, wave goodbye to him after
exactly.
that. You know what I mean? But as we're wrapping things up, one other thing that we mentioned is, so we play Seattle Sounders tomorrow for the round of 16 in the U.S. Open Cup.
Yep.
Listen, we did leave Burrito home. We left Morales home.
Yep.
We left a handful of players who have played a lot of minutes.
Yeah.
They didn't even travel with us to Dallas. And then those in Dallas, Yura didn't see any time. Plata didn't see any time. Mulholland came off after an hour.
Yeah.
Did you say you watched the U.S. game, Ethan?
Yeah, I was watching it mostly.
Did Beckerman come in at all?
I didn't see him, but also, I mean, I was talking at the same time, so I wasn't paying full attention to who was actually in there.
Yeah.
Other than, like, I noticed when Bobby Wood made the play or whatever, so.
Yeah. All right.
But mostly, I mean, I didn't see, so.
So I mean, tell you.
Maybe, I don't think he did. I honestly don't think he did.
I don't see why he would have. But, you know, so he's probably pretty fresh.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, yeah, we played and traveled to Dallas. However, we flew back yesterday. Players get to sleep in their own bed tonight. You know, they got to sleep in their own bed yesterday night. Yeah. Seattle Sounders flies out today and really have zip time to train and get acclimated to the altitude here.
Right.
And on top of that, you know, we're both coming off 2-0 losses. Mm-hmm. There was at home. Ours was away. But they definitely played more of their starting.
Yeah.
And I assume Ethan Dempsey didn't come out on Saturday.
No, I didn't see him at all.
Oh, you didn't see him at all?
No.
Oh, well, you know, maybe he didn't play then, but I still think that we have a pretty good showing. I think most of our guys will be better rested.
Again, he may have played, but I didn't see him personally. So.
Yeah.
But, I mean, at the same time, like I said, I was also talking to someone at the same time and eating, so
yeah.
I wasn't paying complete attention to who was in, just kind of what the team was doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, you know, I think we have the upper hand as far as travel fatigue goes.
Right.
And I think we'll have the upper hand as far as altitude.
Yeah.
You know?
And so that's the thing. Like, we were talking about, like, you know, a lot of people probably watching the game on Saturday was, like, you know, questioning what's going on. And, you know, I don't necessarily agree with it all the way, but, like, the benefit right now is pretty great.
Right. Right.
Like, this is, you know, we're going to come in tomorrow with all of our starters.
Right.
Except Chris Winger, all being rested. Like, you know, and hopefully that'll just help us to, you know, take Seattle to town.
Yeah, listen, I mean, those of us, and there, I mean, I'll admit, I was one of them, I can be one of them, who want us to win every single game.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of silly to not want to win every single game, but when looking at the bigger picture, hands down, I would take a win on Tuesday over the win on Saturday, because you can make up those points. You can't make up a single elimination match.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Clint Dempsey was playing.
Okay, so he's not going to be as rested.
Right.
And I think Seattle's going to heavily rely on him.
Yeah.
Actually.
Yeah, he played the entire game. So.
Actually, now that I think about it, he's suspended. He, last year, he ripped up the ref's pocketbook and got suspended for a minimum of six U.S. Open Cup games.
That's right. That's right.
So he won't even be there.
So there's another soccer for dummies right there. If you're talking about people in your office or your friends are talking about Real Salt Lake game tomorrow, I'll be like, you know, actually, Clint Dempsey doesn't play because he ripped up a ref's book.
Yeah, he got mad. You know? he got mad after he got carded. I think Seattle went down to a 9 or 8 men that match against Portland, and by that time the frustrations just took over, and Dempsey took the pocketbook out of the ref's pocket and just ripped it up and and walked right off. He didn't even wait for the red card. He just walked off.
Yeah, if you guys haven't seen that video, it's pretty funny to watch, like, just how frustrated he was. And like you said, he rips up the book, throws it on the ground, and just walks off the field. Like, doesn't look at the ref, doesn't do any, like, you know, he knew he was off.
Yeah,
well, the thing about it is, like, I mean, you don't want to see that, especially from someone who was kind of the leader of the United States national team.
Right.
Like, because that sets a terrible example. I mean,
oh, it's terrible.
Yeah. We want, I mean, lots of people, they want soccer to be more popular in the U.S., and, you know, they're making strides towards that and everything. But then when you have the guy who's the leader of the team goes and does that, I mean, it's a bad example to set, because it's like, oh, yeah, it's okay to get upset when things don't go your way and to be a bad sport about it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, hopefully that's not what people took from it, but
it was pretty crazy. And I think at that point he was actually captain of the U.S. team. And then
he probably lost the army.
He went to Michael Bradley and has stayed there since. But, like, so Klinsmann didn't take it lightly by any means.
Which is good.
But, yeah, and then we play DC United on Friday.
Yeah, that's right. Definitely go if there are still tickets available. It's a firework game. So there will be fireworks after the match. It should be a lot of fun. But DC, you know, they're a great club. You never want to, you know, discredit or can't think of it, take them lightly.
Right. But
I honestly think that these next two games will win and people will forget about Dallas by the end of Friday.
Right. Especially if we win these two games. Like, yep. You know, like, so.
Yeah, and so, and you were right, Beckerman didn't play, so he's going to be fresh.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think we should be in good shape.
Yeah, good awesome. Game tomorrow. It'll be, you know, I'm sure it's not sold out. It'll be cheap tickets.
Yeah, get out so there. So,
if you're out, it's a late game. It's at 8, I think. We've had a lot of late games.
Yeah.
You know, driving down from Logan.
Driving back is going to suck, but it's worth it.
Yeah.
Especially if we win.
So.
Yeah.
That's fun. Yeah, so that's pretty much all the time we have for today. I want to thank everyone for tuning in to Olay Utah State. And hopefully we're going to get a little clip that plays the Olay, Olay, Olay.
Yes.
We'll get that eventually.
Yeah.
We should record it.
Yeah, we should record
this tomorrow.
Tomorrow, yeah.
But, yeah, so, I mean, hope you guys have a great week. There, to my knowledge, there isn't going to be any sports tomorrow, but there should be the morning show at 8. And also, there should be sports on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, so make sure you tune in for those. I feel like Wednesday will probably be more focused about baseball. I don't know what they're going to do on Thursday, so.
Cool.
This is the main one that's just focused on one sport, mostly. But, I mean, it's good. It's working out pretty well. Yeah, and you can check out this episode if you've missed part of it or want to re-listen to part of it. I'm going to put it online in the next couple minutes. So, yeah. Do you guys have Twitter?
We don't have Twitter, but we do have Facebook.
We have Twitter.
Oh, no, we did do a Twitter. That's right. Yeah. I forgot we did that.
Olay Utah State.
I think it's just Olay Utah State.
Yeah. You got to make sure you have a Twitter, you know?
Yeah, you got to stay up. So it's Olay Utah State, though, if you want to go look us up.
Yeah. And so I'll tell you guys to tweet that out. But anyway, you can check it out. Where you're listening to, obviously, radio.usu.edu. It should be the first thing on the homepage, so
yeah,
make sure you check that out. Anyway, I want to thank you for listening. Have a great week, and yeah, I mean, don't get into too much trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And cheer hard for RSL, unless you have a different team, and then just don't cheer too loud for them if they're playing RSL.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyway, have a good